It is a morning in November.
That's a true statement.
It's like 80 degrees here today, the first week in November. It's weird.
Yeah, it was it's in the 70s here in Wisconsin yesterday. We were doing a lot of outside stuff, of course.
I should have done outside stuff. We had talked about doing outside stuff, and instead I drove an hour plus each way to go to a brewery out by the airport and pick up some beer. The way I rationalize it is that my daughter has been on lockdown, and as a result, she hasn't been out of the house in like 12 days. And I said, well, you've got to at least get in the car with me and just go out of the building. So I made her sit with me. So I took my 13-year-old on a beer run.
Winning. Hashtag yeah. Winning. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm sure there's someone from, what's that association, that government group that takes children from their parents? If you're listening, please, you know, just don't.
Well done, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching the fundamentals.
Well, honestly, I was livid because she was in a dance class last week with someone who, a day and a half, so in the evening, a Thursday evening dance class, do the math with me, and then Saturday morning, we get a note that one of the people in that class came back with a positive test.
Mm.
Now, to the best of my knowledge, those tests take 2 full days, when they're not a rapid test, which aren't nearly as reliable.
Correct.
So my assumption is that this child was sent to class knowing, having been tested already and knowing full well that they may have an issue. And they sent her to a dance class anyway, which pisses me off.
Yeah, that's even worse parenting than taking your 13-year-old on a beer run.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, exactly. So see, I don't get the worst dad award for this weekend. Bad news. So yes, had a good beer run. Had to go pick up some beer with some Gorst Valley hops in it since it's been a while.
Nice.
So I have a rather large stash sitting here behind me.
Good.
And it's interesting. So we'll talk today about some Brewers Association stuff. And we have our new tagline for the Brewers Association. We read it so you don't have to.
Awesome.
It's like reading my kids a bedtime story.
Yeah.
So we're reading to you from the Brewers Association. And in terms of my beer run, one of the things that I read some funny things on their website the last couple of days, but one of them was that there was a nice graph showing can sales at a breweries, and they had these spikes. And, you know, you get spikes at holidays and whatnot, but there was a huge spike in March, which of course was right about the time the lockdown started to be announced. And they've called this the pantry rush. Which I love the phrasing. It's the pantry rush. So everyone went, you mean you might be closing? Hold on. Let me see what I can fit in my trunk.
Wow.
There was this fantastic spike right there.
It makes all the sense, though.
Mm-hmm. We will forever have this as a marker on our historical calendars, the 2020 pantry rush. So I love it. Something else that I read there that I loved is that pumpkin beer volumes are down. Woohoo!
Well, hallelujah. No, I know some people really like them.
And I've had one ever that was actually really good. And you know which one that is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how to take that. Some people will be really pleased with that. Other people will be like, oh. But those are probably also the same people that have already put up their Christmas decorations. So.
Oh, yes. Yes. I was on a Zoom call the other day with the families from this dance class, by the way. Mm-hmm. I was very well behaved. I didn't yell at anyone. Mm-hmm. But with someone, and someone had a tree up in the background, and someone else said, is that a Christmas tree? And of course, today's the 8th of November. So this was, I don't know, this was like the 4th or the 5th. And they said, yeah, we just picked it. We were just making sure it fit in this room. But at this point, we may just run with it. Yeah, too soon. The other item I want to hit on that just made me chuckle from New Brewer before we get into the main topic is that, you know, everyone's talking about the fact that people are drinking more. You keep hearing anecdotally people are drinking more because of the pandemic. And you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the Brewers Association had a great counterpoint to that. They said sales of a lot of things are up. Sales of vegetables are up. And a lot of that's to do with the fact that people aren't going out anymore to eat. They're eating more at home. And they said, but you don't see a headline that says Americans are turning to leafy greens to cope with the pandemic. So yeah, we're bringing in more beer, but it's to a large degree because we're not going out to drink it like we used to. And we're bringing in more hard spirits because we're not going out to drink them like we used to. But the thought of turning to leafy greens to cope, I found priceless. Truly a beer industry magazine's way of rationalizing the behavior.
Nice.
So anyway, that was the fun stuff from the Brewers Association. Now to get to the real stuff.
Okay.
And the thing we wanted to talk about today was representation within the craft beer industry. So specifically, women and people of color, because, I mean, this is a problem. It's a problem in lots of industries. Mm-hmm. But we know it's a problem in craft beer. It's an observed problem in craft beer. And there are things that are, I'll say, that have tried to be done to deal with it. It's a societal issue. And of course, this is, again, North America. So this, I'll say the United States, never mind North America. Because, sorry, Canada, I don't have any statistics for you. Does anyone have statistics for Canada?
There's like three of them. Yeah, so I would hazard a guess, though, that it, at least in the places that I've traveled, I would hazard a guess that internationally from the U.S. is not too dissimilar. Even in more socially progressive regions in Europe, I still don't see it because it's still locked so much in tradition. Mm-hmm. But that's just a personal observation.
Yeah, and we can only observe what we can observe. So to put some context around this, everyone who listens knows, I live in Connecticut. I grew up in you know, the suburbs outside of New York City. I'm a almost 50-year-old, not quite, I'm going to keep on holding on to that. I'm an almost 50-year-old, you know, white Jewish guy from outside of New York City. So you can tell exactly where that places me in terms of the demographics of things. Statistics, just yep. What's out there right now. And I will say there's very little in terms of recent information. And I think, honestly, it's because everything we're seeing in terms of studies has much more to do with, of course, the pandemic. When are you likely to go back to going, you know, in person again? How safe do you feel? You know, the pandemic is taking over. You can only ask so many survey questions at a time.
Right.
And between, you know, questions about alcohol are all related to the pandemic and, you know, everything else up until, you know, I guess, I don't know, I think we're about 24 hours in, has been related to election statistics.
I was just going to ask you about that, saying, so yeah. we're really going to trust election or statistics given what we know right now? Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So, oh, man, so much more we can go into there. But, yeah, so it's not a good time to be looking at those types of statistics because the numbers are old. But I would hazard to guess they haven't changed very much in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So here are some numbers I'm just going to throw out there. The last statistics from Nielsen, which is in 2018, said that 32% of craft beer was consumed by women. And their presence in the industry in relevant positions is about 29%. So actually close to the consumer number. You know, keeping in mind that women make up, 52% of the population, something like that? There are a couple more of them than men.
I would assume it would be very close to half.
You would, yes. Their population statistic, yes, should be right around half. I think there are a few more women than men in the general population, I think because they're less likely to do stupid shit and, like, fall off cliffs and things. So I do think they outnumber us by a tad. Mm-hmm. Purely due to better self-preservation.
That makes sense.
Yep. That's not scientific. That's just my observation. But yes, 32% of craft beer consumed by women. I think if you looked at those numbers on wine, it would probably be lopsided the other way. And that's a cultural thing. Mm-hmm. We'll get into the marketing to women and all that. But I think that's just the way the industry has been for a long time. It was something like 27% a few years prior to the 32 number in 2018. So it's getting better. Craft beer has become more popular. I think that as there are more places to go drink craft beer and it becomes more of a social hangout, that number will continue to increase. There's more of a reason to have a craft beer. Mm-hmm. So let's see. As far as when we look in the industry, so the non-white population, men and women in the United States, 14.5% of the craft beer industry is non-white. that number is ridiculously low.
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculously low. And the non-white population in the United States that is of drinking age is 31%. So think about that. I mean, the ratio is off by half.
Wow. That's incredible.
It is very, very different. And now this statistic was when there were 6,300 craft breweries, which I think is several years old at this point. But at the time, 50 of them were black owned. 50. Less than 1%. That's about 8%. Crazy.
Yeah. I don't have words to other mm-hmm. than, and it's like, we could take all of these things you're saying and just say, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're surprising from a math perspective, but they're not surprising given an observational perspective, because this is what we see.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to be careful. So a lot of these statistics, and you were just joking, but not joking, about how bad polls are. And I have a statistics upbringing, as do you. And, you know, so much of it is how you frame the question. But a lot of the things you'll see are things like, and here's one, 70% of women drink craft beer. Well, yeah, 77% of women who drink beer drink craft beer.
Right.
So you've got to be careful. Whenever you see some of these numbers, you need to really be careful about what they mean.
It seems like they're either intentionally, or maybe it's not intentional, leaving out some very critical caveats to their mm-hmm. statistics.
Yep, yep. It's all perspective. So there are things that go on in the industry. There are intentional things that are done. So Pink Boots is a big example mm-hmm. of that. And I know there was a Pink Boots collab going on here in town. Just last week, I was seeing some pictures of it. But, you know, that is a concerted effort towards getting women involved in the craft beer industry. You know, we talked before we got on the call about our new friends. If you haven't listened to the False Bottom Girls, Jen and Rachel, they do a podcast about beer, specifically about beer styles. And one of them is an executive at a brewery in Atlanta. The other one is the co-owner and head brewer at Pilot Brewing. They are you know, neck deep in the industry, and they were, their podcast a week or two ago was all about STEM science careers for young women.
Mm-hmm.
So they are using their positions in a good way to promote things to get women more involved, whether it's in the brewing industry or other, what you call science related things, which I think is great.
Absolutely.
Give them a listen when you're done listening to us, if you haven't. They do nice work. They're fun. We spoke just the other day about collaborations, and there's the Black is Beautiful recipe that was making the rounds. And a lot of that is reactionary, of course, to what has been going on in this country with race relations. But it's still, you know, steps in the right direction. It's ways of creating awareness.
Yeah, but that's, did you not give statistics on that? Maybe in an earlier episode about the number of breweries that were taking part in that?
I did. Let's see if I still have them here somewhere. It was, I should have them right around here. It's definitely not from the episode on photosynthesis.
Not likely.
No, that wouldn't have been right. All right. I will dig those numbers up. I know that's strange because I know they were around here somewhere. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Nope, don't have them. I don't know where I put those notes down, but I do not see them. Darn it. Okay, I'll try and find them. But yes, but it was something, I want to say, you're right, it was something around like 50 different countries that was going on in. I mean, it was huge. It became a global thing.
1,200 something. I don't know if it was 1,200. It was big. We'll have to find it.
It was big. There's actually a black beer festival called Fresh Fest, which I had no idea existed, which I think is great. You know, again, promoting awareness and inclusion. The Brewers Association actually has a diversity ambassador now.
When did that start? Do you know?
It started a year ago.
Oh, okay.
And you know, I know what you're thinking, and I'm thinking the same thing. They did go through a whole wave of layoffs recently
mm-hmm.
with everything going on, and I wonder if that's still a thing for them. I certainly hope it is.
And whoever was left said, guess what? You're the diversity ambassador, too.
Yes, that may have been what happened. Oh, boy. But yeah, and the intent of that role, and I hope it's still there, was to, you know, and as with everything with the Brewers Association, and again, they are not a sponsor. We just like what they put out. the intent of most of their material there is to help educate breweries, and they help with, you know, with business planning and financials and whatnot. So this is a resource for breweries for how do you work on your diversity footprint. Mm-hmm. So they have this diversity ambassador on staff. And then, you know, we mentioned the False Bottom girls, but these cracked me up. There are two other social media influencers on the African-American beer side of things. There's the Afro Beer Chick. And the other one, you're going to love this, Ale Sharpton.
Oh, God.
I love it. I love it.
Wow.
But, you know, trying to get more folks who wouldn't be exposed to craft beer otherwise involved. So these are these pockets that exist out there. And, you know, I think about, now living in the bubble, as I do, I think about craft beer, and I don't think about it in terms of gender or in terms of race or in terms of religion or anything else like that. It's beer. I like beer. Right. You'd like this beer too. You should taste this beer. I don't think about these things in that way. And that, of course, is part of the problem, is the forest for the trees situation, where the craft beer community doesn't think about being exclusionary. Or maybe that's the wrong way of looking at it. Maybe they're certainly not thinking that they are being exclusionary, but maybe not. They're not thinking enough about being inclusionary.
Right. I was just going to say, it's what are the assumptions that we have been making, whether they're to the best intentions or otherwise, or I should say, whether there's no malintention there whatsoever, but they're wrong. Right, your assumptions are wrong. That if you thought, oh, I don't have any problem, why is it just a bunch of white middle-aged guys with beards and plaid? We don't have any problem with anybody else joining. Well, did you ever think that, you know, like, you didn't really want to approach a group because you didn't feel like you fit in because you didn't look like them, or you didn't talk like them, or you didn't, you know, it's like the people that are in the club don't have any problem with anybody else, but just by the virtue of them being so similar to one another, they're excluding other people.
Mm-hmm. Bingo.
It's weird.
It is, and you know, it's this is perfect, because one of the there's a new book out there, and I want to get my hands on this book. It's called Beer and Racism: How Beer Became White, Why It Matters, and the Movements to Change It. And the review of the book on this was the first time the Brewers Association had ever done a book review. They said, we just felt it was necessary, and they did say this is almost like a university textbook type, and it's a little hard to get into. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that if you're running a brewery, you're necessarily going to go, oh, this is the next book I should read.
Right.
The authors, let's see here, Daniel Chapman and David Brunsma. Sorry for butchering your name there, David. They say here, there are really two reasons why this goes on, if you kind of boil it all down. And it's really, the first one is what you just said. It's that, first of all, the craft beer network, they offer unequal access, because getting in the first place is hard. It's just hard to get in because of that lack of being welcome. Because, to your point, it's walking in somewhere where there's no one else who looks like you, sounds like you, acts like you. It's hard to do that. And the thing is, the longer you don't bring people in at those higher levels in those organizations, the harder it is to then turn around and market to consumers. Mm-hmm. So it's this self-fulfilling prophecy that's going on. And as you said about the inclusion exclusion thing, when you're on the inside of that, it's easy to say, oh, sure, no problem. But that's different than being proactively welcoming and pulling.
Right.
There's got to be some pulling going on.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, showing up at a new junior high, and you've got these cliques of people, and you're kind of maybe interested in this group or that group, but, you know, they're already so clicky together that you're intimidated to approach them. You don't know how to approach them. I mean, some people that are extroverted just jump in and be like, hey, here I am, I'm going to do this, and to hell with everything. But most people aren't that way.
Yep. Very, very true. And So I mentioned dragging my 13-year-old across the state to buy beer with me. She's a huge musical theater buff, and one of the shows she's very into right now, and she's gotten me into the music, because I'm also a big musical theater buff. Feel free to start making fun of me at any moment. The musical version of Mean Girls, the music is phenomenal. And it is really about exactly that. A girl who's coming to a high school after having been homeschooled and living with her parents in the Peace Corps. And one of the early numbers in the show is called Where Do You Belong? And they go through the band geeks and the mathletes and the jocks and the hot girls and all these different things. And it's exactly what you said. It's like being back in junior high school again. And how do you break in here unless you're invited?
Right.
So when you're not invited, what do? You form your own group, and thus we have Pink Boots and the Black Beer Festival, the Fresh Fest, and all these things that are being created, I would say, out of the necessity to speak up and go, we're here. Hello.
We want to participate.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's others out there like us that want to participate too. So therefore, we're going to just do this ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because we're not, I don't know, I'm of two minds of that, because it's like, well, I applaud them for wanting to be inclusive in their own communities. But I'm also a little bit upset about why we can't have that, why this conversation isn't happening at a much higher level, or at least more public level across the industry for people who are, you know, into craft beer, and realizing that, you know, individually they're saying, well, I don't have any problem being inclusive. I just like good beer. Okay, well, what are you doing then to help stimulate that across other groups? And it's not enough just to say, well, I don't have any problem with it.
You've got to do more. And, you know, if you want to take out the humanity side of it for just a second, if you want to go strictly to the marketing side of it, you kind of got the 21 to 45 year old male white market locked down there. You know, there's not a lot of expansion left to do. You got them. Mm-hmm. So if you want to expand to other demographics, you need to look at, you need to have folks, you know, look, I am not going to tell you how to market to a young Black woman. No. There are people who can explain that better than I can. But you need the people who can explain that, who can help figure that out and promote that inclusivity and get folks into your brewery. Because if it's just a bunch of old white guys with beards, as we've said, you've tapped out what's existing there. Mm-hmm. So one more silly statistic from the Brewers Association: recovered year over year volume bounce back in terms of on-premise sales. The number one is golf courses and country clubs are back at 85% of what they were selling a year ago today. And that's all the old white men coming in to play golf and drink their beer.
I don't know. I know that probably. I know an awful lot of women that golf too. But
okay,
to your point, I think that's also a...
That's a socioeconomic thing as well.
It is. Yeah, there you go. That's where I was headed.
Mm-hmm. The next highest bounce back rate was restaurants and bars are at around 60%, which is a big difference from 85.
Right. And I would suspect too that that's lopsided extremely heavily based on region.
I would tend to agree with
you. For right now, just with all the lockdowns and stuff that's going on. That's why I think maybe golf courses are seeing that such a high bounce back, because it's, hey, it's outside and, you know, there's social distancing kind of inherent in the game. So maybe not the clubhouse, but they get a few more golf carts or drink carts running around. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's fair. That's fair. There is opportunity there. All right. So where else to go here? So, you know, again, difficult. You and I, you know, we're not going to show up here and tell you how to fix this problem, but it's all about, it comes back to being about inclusive.
You can do it.
I'm butchering the word.
You can do
inclusivity.
It.
Inclusivity. Is that right?
That
inclusive.
Is.
Yeah,
inclusivity. Yes,
inclusivity.
Yes,
and again, if you have to think about it from a pure marketplace perspective, that's how you expand. You know, why is seltzer doing so well? Women, they went straight for women, and guess what? It worked because they weren't being addressed by typical craft beer.
Right.
Women don't have well. I mean, you're going to correct me on this. I was going to say women don't have different taste buds than men.
They don't.
They don't actually?
No.
Oh, gee. Wow. Okay. I figured you were going to
left
turn us into some sciencey science.
No, no. Well, that could. Hey, I didn't know that's what we were doing. But now that you bring it up.
So, I mean, look at the seltzer the seltzer situation, it was aimed at women and it worked. You know, ciders have always done well that way. There's a sweetness factor there, certainly, mm-hmm. but there's no reason why craft beer can't aim itself differently and more broadly without losing its core base.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think there's probably no short measure of people saying, well, what I'm doing now is working, so I'm not going to upend the apple cart just because there may be more market out there. Maybe I'm making all the beer I can. Mm-hmm. And okay, that's valid, but you know, what are you doing in terms of your entire, you know, community? And the people that can figure out how to do this are going to have a corner on a market that are going to leave the rest of the brewers struggling to catch up in. As we talk, you know, very frequently about, you know, brewers constantly chasing trends. I mean, I don't know how one would catch up to that. It's not an ingredient one could add to a beer. It's not a new style of, you know, hazy or something like that. That's just a little bit of a tweak. It's a sea change in how you do business and how you see your business reaching out to your customer base. And one doesn't pivot to chase a trend like that. So whoever can build a business around that market space is going to own that market space, I think.
I agree. And, you know, since you said hazy, I'm going to throw another statistic at you.
Yay.
This is the one I mentioned before we started recording that I wanted to surprise you with because you'll love it. Mm-hmm. Compared to a few years ago, are you more or less interested in drinking the following types of craft beer?
Less.
Well, this is by all of your favorite words, like juicy, hazy, mm-hmm. and all that. Mm-hmm. The number one with women that they want to see more of is crisp. Mm-hmm. It is not juicy. It is not hazy. It is not fruity. It is not tart. It is crisp.
Yep.
So,
like a good Pilsner.
Mm-hmm. And the way they described crisp was balanced / clean beers, not too malty or hoppy. Mm-hmm. So that was a far and away higher number for women and for younger drinkers, for 21 to 34 year olds. They all went for crisp. Juicy, I would have expected the younger drinkers in general to go for juicy and hazy, but that was more older, believe it or not.
Well,
and hoppy was all men.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. Maybe the younger ones are like, I don't want to drink what those old people are drinking.
Maybe. They want to be defiant just to be defiant.
That's why craft beer came out in the first place, because nobody wanted to drink their, you know, they're tired of stealing hams and grain belt and stuff from their dad's fridge out in the garage, red, white, and blue.
There is a large degree of, I'll do it differently and better than those old people do it. That's just always a thing, generationally. But yeah, I thought you would be happy about crisp.
I am. And everyone listening, women are right. Make more crisp, clean beers, please. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. We need more of that. Absolutely. All right. So what else do we have here? I've hit you with all my statistics. There's not a lot else we can say about this, to be honest, except for the opportunities are out there. It's still, I think, again, focus on it has dwindled, at least statistically, in the last year or so because, oh yeah, pandemic, mm-hmm. which is unfortunate. But we'll get back to that.
Yeah,
things will turn back around to okay. Now that we're back in business regularly and whatnot, how do we expand? How do we cover more of our market? And I think you're right about geography playing a big part in it and what people are focused on.
Yeah, some places don't allow even takeout anymore of beer. So, and those places have to shut those breweries, you know, tap rooms have to shut down. In other parts of the country, it's like business as usual. So gathering statistics right now, it must be really tough. Not only gathering it, but also making any sort of statement about an industry where the level of business norm across the region across the country is fractured.
Yep. You know, to all of our listeners out there, you know, luckily we have listeners all over the country and all over the world, as James and I know are two relatively distinct population centers. Please, you know, give us some thoughts on this, on what you see locally to you. I think there's a lot of You know, as we keep on harping on here, there's a lot of geographical situational stuff going on out there. We'd love to hear about your perspectives on all this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to draw a corollary to the farming industry, agriculture, and women in farming. Now it's there's always been women in farming, as there's always been women in brewing, period. I think...
Well, farming's been family-related for so long. It's been an entire family endeavor.
It has, but yet, and aside from the gender thing, you also have cultural minorities also heavily into farming, but not to the extent, I should say, that. But the brewing industry has a few of them, but not nearly to the extent that that we have a... I don't want to call it integrated. That's a bad word. Inclusive farming communities, you know. You've got people of all races and skin colors and sexualities farming, but it's still predominantly a white male endeavor. So I see some corollaries between the agriculture industry and the brewing industry, but the brewing industry is by far, far outweighed by the white male demographic than the agriculture industry. And I don't know what happened in, let's face it, both industries, both, you know, brewing and agriculture have a fair degree of machismo involved, right? And it would be interesting to look at in agriculture, how did women overcome that? I'm sure they haven't yet in a lot of places, right? Where I'm sure there's probably lots of, you know, extremely successful and capable female farmers still being called little lady and asking if they need help turning a wrench, right?
Sure.
But is there any way we can look at that industry and what the inclusion of women and other cultural minorities, how did that happen and how did that progress to the point where it's not at all uncommon now to see a woman farmer in the most culturally or socially conservative, you know, traditional male farming arenas? I don't know. And I don't know anything about this. I don't know how it started, how it progressed, what the hurdles were. But it's just what I see now is something where I wish I would see in the brewing industry. And I don't know if there's any way we could look into that or not.
I don't know. It's an interesting thought. It's a very interesting thought to see the progression. I come back to the family aspect, and farming is something where at least within your own family, you can hiring the wife or the daughter to come on in on the family farm seems like a no-brainer to me, as opposed to an independent business where the ceiling is a little more in existence still.
Yeah, there's that. I will give you that. There's that. But I look at like my mother, she was the youngest of nine and there were seven girls. And she grew up on a farm. Her dad was a farmer. And who took over the farm? The boy. One of the two boys. He took over the farm because that's not what women did. But, you know, mom's going on 80 now and she was the youngest. So you can, you know, there was a time when, you know, the thought of a woman farmer in the United States in the 1950s was laughable, right? But
true.
Now it isn't at all. And you're right. There could be somebody out there, even in Wisconsin. It's a friend of mine who's, you know, an active dairy farmer. And she's taken over from her father. Because, you know, is it because her brother didn't want anything to do with it? No, not really. It's because she's the one who was engaged with it and wanted to do it. And there's that stigma there of women in agriculture that is dissolving, that was rampant and existed, and it was a wall, a barrier for women to farm, even as late as the late 80s, early 90s. So it's like, what happened there to suddenly make it acceptable for them to be there when everybody around them would probably say the same thing that we said about brewers or beer lovers, saying, I don't care who brews my beer as long as they make good beer. Something changed, an attitude changed, and I don't know what it is.
I would like to hope, we always hope this, that it's about quality, that, hey, I don't care that this was a woman that brought me these cattle. They're fantastic. Mm-hmm. You'd like to think quality would trump everything else. It doesn't always work that way.
Right.
That gets back to attitudes and prejudices and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, using that as a template, it would be interesting to understand more about how that now that I'm sure there are texts about.
Oh, I've got to be. Mm-hmm. You know, and not just about, like, if you look up here in Wisconsin, I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find a person of color farming. There's just not that many of them. But you go other places in the country, and that's what you see a significant percentage of. You know, mm-hmm. you see black people, you see, you know, Latin American people, you see Asian people running farms and running them successfully at a much larger proportion. But you come into Wisconsin and some of these other places, they're rare to find indeed.
Of course. And again, I'm in central Connecticut, so same situation, mm-hmm. certainly. I mean, not many farms and not many minorities.
Right. I don't know. It's a big topic.
It is. It is. There's a lot more here to unpack that we don't understand. We're just two observers who,
right,
you know, find it unfortunate that there's not more representation out there. And I'm encouraged by these groups that go out and do things, again, like Pink Boots, like Fresh Fest, like these things. You know, it's unfortunate that's what it takes to get the representation bubbles going on. But if we can learn from those groups and expand and this is the wrong word, but mainstream that into more normalcy, mm-hmm. that's the direction it needs to go in. I think when we talk about the women, the percent women in particular in the craft beer industry, and I'm going to say something that may not be popular, but my suspicion is that where was that number that I was quoting before? 29% of the craft beer industry is women. My suspicion is that falls heavily on the marketing, social media, business operations side, and much less on the head brewer side.
Mm-hmm. I would believe that to be true.
Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I mentioned our friends at False Bottom Girls. Rachel is the head brewer. Mm-hmm. She's also the owner. So, I mean, she didn't have to be hired as the head brewer. She opened this brewery. It's hers. but, you know, I suspect in the majority of cases, the women representation is not equally represented around the brewery.
I would agree with your assumption there.
But it's still a step in the right direction. It's still getting more women involved in the business and in the beer industry, which in turn will bring more women into it.
Right.
It goes back to your point before about, you know, why would I walk in the door if I don't see anyone inside who looks like me? Sorry, Canada. I